The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille. Official media partner, the Italian Wine Podcast, is delighted to present a series of interviews and highlights from the 2023 Wine to Wine Business Forum, featuring Italian wine producers and bringing together some of the most influential voices in the sector to discuss the hottest topics facing the industry today. Don't forget to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. or visit theitalianwinepodcast.com for more information.
Let's start. Welcome, everybody. I think we'll have a few more people coming in as lunch finishes. My name is Jill Gordon-Smith, and I'm an Italian wine expert with Vinitaly Academy. I'm also a wine educator and a small producer in Australia. And it is my very, very great pleasure to introduce Marco. So Marco Nordio, he was born in Chioggia in Venice, and Marco lives in New Zealand. So he's lived there for 20 years. So he graduated in monetary economics at the Bocconi University in Milan. And in 1997, he went to America, to Cambridge, to study at the MIT Sloan School of Management. So he has a very good background in finance, as well as a great love for wine. He bought a boat and sailed for 3 years and ended up in New Zealand, so in 2004. And it was in New Zealand that he attended a postgraduate master's program in wine, and especially focusing on wine science, and actually planted a little Nebbiolo vineyard. He has had a one-acre vineyard with Nebbiolo vines, and then in 2013, he started his own business. It's Sapori d'Italia Imports, and this is one of the biggest companies in New Zealand for imports for Italian wine. So he oversees, sources and distributes the largest range of Italian wines in New Zealand. In 2019, he organised a very successful first edition of the Vino Italiano portfolio, a big tasting in Auckland, with over 150 wines available for tasting and 15 producers travelling from Italy. So Marco has a very, very good grasp of the industry from both a financial and also from a wine background. In April 2023, he passed the very tough exam organised by Vinitaly International Academy and he became an Italian wine ambassador. So I'd like to pass over to Marco for his comments on the New Zealand wine industry. Marco.
Thank you very much, Jill. I think I owe you a drink for this presentation. No, thank you very much for taking part into this this presentation of Italian wines in New Zealand. It's really a pleasure to be here. It's a honor, actually. And I should thank, first of all, Stevie Kim and the fantastic team at Vinitaly International about this wonderful initiative and for inviting me. So we're going to talk about New Zealand wines, and I'm going to show you, first of all, just a preview of what really we're going to talk about today. So we're going to start from the New Zealand snapshot, so a little bit of macro data about the country we're talking about, what kind of demographics, what kind of a market is in New Zealand, what people like, what people drink in New Zealand. And then we talk about the New Zealand wine market, size and structure. Then we're going to go a little bit more technical. We're going to try to work out the landing cost for wines imported in New Zealand, and the regulatory framework, what is needed for wines to be sold in New Zealand, imported from overseas. And then a few words about distribution channels, and then finally some takeaway points. First of all, I would like to start with a couple of surprising cultural links between Italy and New Zealand, because as you all know, Italy and New Zealand are the two most faraway countries geographically you can find. But there are at least the one I found, very surprising, because they are not very well known in Italy, but they are very, very present in New Zealand, about these cultural links between Italy and New Zealand. The first link revolves around the figure of Romeo Bragato. Who is Romeo Bragato? Romeo Bragato is a viticulturist They studied in the Conegliano Viticultural School. We're talking about the end of the 19th century, so it was a while ago. He emigrated first to Australia and then to New Zealand. Well, in New Zealand, he became a legend. It is basically a viticulturist that kind of outline the future of the viticulture in New Zealand. It defined the area and the best grapes to plant, and he helped against to defend the plants against the phylloxera that was the issue at the time. Just to give you an idea, the main viticultural center, research center in New Zealand is named after Romeo Bragato, and the main viticulturist conference that is held every year in different cities in New Zealand is called the Romeo Bragato Conference. Now, I don't know how many people in Italy know about Romeo Bragato, but definitely in New Zealand is very well present and very well known in the wine industry. The second cultural link, so very strong, is about the role of a Maori battalion during the Second World War in Italy. So the Maori fought with the British Army, part of the British Army, at the Cassino Battle, which is one of the bloodiest battles in the Second World War. During those times, because it lasted months, they form family links with Italians. And there is a museum in New Zealand dedicated to the Maori battalion. One room of the museum is about the Cassino battle, and there are a lot of posters about how Italians were welcoming Maoris, how they really interacted with the Maoris in Italy at the time. Why are we talking about this? Because, first of all, Professor Scienza always taught me during the ambassador course that wine is a cultural product, first of all, and you need to present it as a cultural product. But also, it is important because these points underline the kind of a soft power that Italy has, I'm sure not only in New Zealand, but worldwide. We have a power of making people already at ease. When you mention Italy, New Zealand, you're welcome with a smile and good memory, and very fantastic memories about Italy. So this is already presenting the importing of wine, specifically what we're talking about, already starting in a good way, and starting already in a very favorable way.
Are you enjoying this podcast? There is so much more high-quality wine content available from Mama Jumbo Shrimp. Check out our new wine study maps, our books on Italian wine, including Italian Wine Unplugged, The Jumbo Shrimp Guide to Italian Wine, Sangiovese Lambrusco and Other Stories, and much, much more on our website, mamajumboshrimp.com. Now back to the show.
Okay, now we can talk about the technicalities and go more into details, but always having this background on your mind that we have this soft power, very convincing soft power. Okay, so where is New Zealand and how many people live in New Zealand? So 5.1 million compared to 59 million in Italy, and the population is very concentrated. So Auckland is the main center and the main market, because one-third of the New Zealand population live in Auckland, is where I live. And it's a highly multicultural world. As you can see, 50% European descent, but this is a declining percentage. And 30% Asian, which is a growing share, and a pretty stable 20% between Pacifica and Maori. Pacifica meaning people from the islands, like Rarotonga, Fiji, and Samoa. One characteristic of New Zealand, the population is rapidly rising. So you have a 2%, for example, this year, 2% annual increase due to net immigration. This is not due to the natality, it's just immigration, net immigration. There are a lot of New Zealand that goes overseas to have an experience, but they all come back later on, most of them. And then you have the huge attraction of New Zealand attracting people from all around the world. So we are in a situation where the population is growing, the market is growing every year. So it's quite different from Italy, for example. GDP per capita is very similar to Italy. Sadly, both countries are well below the EU average. What is very important to remember about New Zealand? New Zealand is a wine-producing country. It's relatively recent, seriously producing wines, but it is really a powerhouse as an export country, because with less than 1% of a world vineyard area, New Zealand is able to represent the number six exporting country worldwide. This is also is due to the quantity of exports, but also to the value. It's able to sell it, New Zealand wines of very, very high value. Why is it important to remember this? Because it's important to remember what New Zealand people are used to drink. They're used to drink what? Their own wines, because obviously they are used to this. And what are they producing? 75% of the production is concentrated in Sauvignon Blanc, one grape. 85% of the production is exported. 90%, consequently, 90% of the export is Sauvignon Blanc, and 80% of the export goes only to three markets. So it's a bit of a concentrating, a little bit unbalanced situation, but it's a sign of, in my opinion, also of how young is the country and how little time there was to really diversify the sale and the production as well. There is a lot of experimentation in New Zealand with new grapes, but so far, Sauvignon has been so successful, it became kind of a benchmark for this grape. In New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc, you go around the world, you find in all restaurants. Again, why are we talking about this? Because New Zealand drinkers are used to this kind of wines. And if you know Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, you know this kind of a grassy, kind of a green, fresh and fruity driven. Not all of them is a bit changing, but the traditional benchmark Sauvignon Blanc is this kind of a style. So New Zealand drinker in white wines in particular, they expect, they are used to this kind of wines. So it's not easy, and here we go to one of the conclusions already. Italian whites are quite different from this style, apart from rare exceptions, I would say. So this is a little bit of a challenge in New Zealand, especially with Italian white wines, even if things are a little bit changing. New Zealand is a country that changes quickly, very different again from Italy. So things get embraced and then move on, and then things change quite quickly. But at the moment, the situation is this. There is a slowly embracing of new styles of white wine, but traditionally they are used to Sauvignon Blanc. Okay, now we go down in with numbers. So we're going to, being a finance guy, I like numbers. You probably will realize at the end of this presentation. So total domestic sales, as you can see, New Zealand share in terms of quantity represent 50% of the wine consumption. So domestic sales, as you can see from the chart, the blue line in the bottom chart, has been a little bit declining, but stable to slash declining, while the total wine is a little bit declining. And if you combine with what we said before, that the population is rapidly raising, you will notice, and we'll see in a later chart, that the consumption per capita is actually declining of the wine in New Zealand. And New Zealand wine is a bit declining. The share of the domestic market is going down. So Kiwis is what we call New Zealanders. We are embracing more and more international wines. And what is booming is the export of New Zealand wine. So New Zealand is a powerhouse of wine production, mainly because of exports. So more and more exports. And then what are New Zealanders drinking? What kind of a style of wine? So we have from this table, we can see in the last 5 years, we can see that the most sold wine is, again, white wine. So 47.5% of all wine consumed in New Zealand is white. Here is altogether imported and domestic production. Then the second category will be still red wine, about 30%. And then we have a sparkling wine. Sparkling wine, we can see some very interesting trends here, because in the last 5 years, both champagne has its own category, being so important, and other sparkling wines, they've been rapidly rising. So these two categories are really representing around 22% of the amount of the total, but they are growing every year. At the same time, reds are quite stable, 30%, while whites are stable, as Rabbi said, they're quite stable. The structure of the consumption are quite stable. Just to compare with Australia, wine sales in Australia would be 9.6 billion of a New Zealand dollar, compared to the size of the market, 2.1 billion for New Zealand compared to 9.6 for Australia. So the relationship is about 1 to almost 5 between New Zealand consumption and total Australian consumptions. So New Zealand market has a similar share, I don't know if you're familiar, with Ireland and Poland. So we're talking of this kind of a size of a market. This is the chart that I was talking before. The wine consumption per capita in New Zealand is declining. On the side, I wrote something that I've been surprised myself, actually, to realize how the wine represent only 18% of total alcohol consumption in New Zealand. This is quite low. But again, it's very similar to what happens in Australia and in UK. So beer and the spirits are very, are actually the majority of the alcohol consumption. In Italy, just to have a comparison, it's 52%, it's 50-50. Wine represents half of the total alcohol consumption, so much higher than New Zealand. This is an important difference between the two markets. And then the consumption per capita, as you all know, in Italy is much higher. It's about 45 liters. And in Australia, it's much higher than in New Zealand, again, 29 compared to about 17 for New Zealand. Another important difference, and that explains this kind of a chart, is also the importance of the Italian community in Australia is much bigger than in New Zealand. New Zealand, there are about 7,000 Italians living in New Zealand, compared to millions. How many, Jill?
Oh, we've probably got about 600,000 Italians, I would think, something like that. It's quite a high population.
I thought it would be even...
No.
In
Melbourne. That's only in Melbourne.
Okay, Melbourne. No, yeah, that's not right.
But we have quite a large Italian population.
Yes.
Lots of immigrants in the 50s, 40s and 50s.
So New Zealand, in Australia, people will be more used to, more familiar with Italian wines, Italian style. In New Zealand, you really have to start from scratch or miss some situation where you don't know much about Italian wines. But having said that, it's an opportunity. Okay, so how much wine consumed in New Zealand is premium? So we have some price ranges, some brackets. So value wine, 7%. So value defined as a $5 to $10 retail price. Standard, 32%. Premium, 37%. So the majority of wine sold in New Zealand is as a retail price of between $10 and $20. Super premium, 18%. Ultra premium, 4%. And prestige, 1%. What is important to see the trend. What are people buying? Here we see the trend. Recent trends of premium versus commercial wines. Commercial wines defined as previously said. So we see, and this is something I've been told that you can notice in many countries around the world. So this is not, it doesn't seem to be specific to New Zealand. So standard wines are declining. The share is declining from 37 to 32%. Premium wines are going up, so 35 to 37. Super premium are going up even more, from 15 to 18. And even ultra premium are going up, 1%, and prestige, 1%. So there is a trend towards a little bit more premium wines in New Zealand. And you probably can confirm if that's true in other markets as well.
Marco, can I ask you, why do you think that is?
That's an interesting... I think this reflects some social changes because there is a kind of polarization of society worldwide, in my opinion. Having an economic background, I can see that there are people that have and people have not. And in New Zealand, it has traditionally a very egalitarian tradition, extremely egalitarian. Things are changing. I've been there for 20 years and I noticed that. So there is a social explanation. Again, wine being a cultural product reflects what the society changes, what was happening with the society. I don't know what you think about this.
I think there's definitely a bigger divide between the very rich and the middle class is becoming poorer as interest rates go up. It's an issue around the world, I think, but exactly. Definitely would be more noticeable in New Zealand because of the smaller population.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have a big table here. So now we're going to go into details about wine imports in New Zealand. And we have a table about quantities. So here we talk about volumes. So we can see immediately that Australia represents 73% in 2023 of the total volume of wine imported in New Zealand. 8% France, 6% Italy. And if you remember these numbers, you will see the next table will talk about value. They will be very different because there is a lot of Australian wine imported in New Zealand that has a below average price. And so the percentage will drop dramatically when we talk about value, the value of imports. And what kind of wines are imported? So again, we have white wines, 49% in 2023. And the trend has been from 42, as you see, around 50%, pretty stable. Red wines are a little bit declining in terms of the imports, it's going down to 36. Sparkling, as we noticed before, has been going up, so from 5% to 11% of all imports are sparkling. Champagne in itself from 2 to 4%, double. And this is kind of a breakdown of the wine imported in New Zealand. And then we have some pie charts underneath that just summarize. So we have for liters, again, we have a big share of whites, it's about 50% as we notice. And on the right hand, you have a pie chart that's showing the value, but we will see more detail on the table next slide. If this is a pie chart about the value, as you can see, as the whites, there is a lot of imported, cheaper white imported in New Zealand because, in terms of value, it represents much less share than 50%. Maybe a little confusing, too many numbers, but let's see now. Wine imports in New Zealand. So in this case, we're talking about value on top. So 50% of the value of the imported wines come from Australia. So this is down from 73, as we saw before. France suddenly jumped to 31% because French wines command a higher price. Well, we all know that. But Italy is doing very well because actually 9% of the value of imported wines comes from Italy, and this is higher than quantity-wise. So it means the Italian imports have a higher than average price. So it's not the cheapest wine imported from Italy. It's higher than average. And then there are other countries. And then we can see what kind of wines are imported from Italy. So 25 million is the total. More than half of imported wines in New Zealand, Italian wines, is sparkling and obviously Prosecco. And this is something that we already have an important message coming from this table. The New Zealand is importing more than 50% of the value of the wine, Italian wine imported, is Prosecco. And this is again a sign of not only of the success of Prosecco, that deserves as a huge success worldwide, but again, I think it's a sign that we are early stages of the Italian wine penetration in New Zealand, because Prosecco, for many importers, not really in the case of Sapore d'Italia from my company, because I have a range, I cover all regions, but many importing companies in New Zealand, they have only one wine from Italy, only Prosecco. So they have their own range of wines plus one Prosecco, and that's it. And this is the majority of cases. And these numbers confirm these observations. But again, this is a sign, you know, Prosecco is the first wine you list on premise, but after that comes, you can spread and you can introduce a new wine. So actually, it's a sign of how young is the country in this sense. So there's more potential here. And then the second category will be red wines. And as we noticed before, white wines are a little bit struggling in Italian whites, not only for the different style, but again, as having seen that, I think there is an opportunity, and we will see that a little bit later. So in terms of value, again, 34% is the share of imported wines in New Zealand, 34%. And again, this is similar to Australia and the US. Why do I notice these similarities between New Zealand, Australia, and USA? This is something with Jill we've been talking a lot. It's something that when you talk about the small market like New Zealand, it's important to compare with similar markets. And this is something I would always encourage export managers. I know a few export managers here. When you approach an importer like Sapore d'Italia, I think it's important. Sapore d'Italia would be the experts of the local markets. Definitely, I live there. I know what people drink. I have a feeling about it. But there's not enough exchange, in my opinion, in terms of the global market. So I've been studying this, I've been preparing this presentation, but I think an export manager should, in my opinion, bring this to an importer. Say, look, this wine that you're going to try in other markets, in similar markets, is doing very well. For an importer, it would be very hard to say no to a proposition like that, because it's a very strong point, It's not always possible, I agree, it's not always possible, too, but maybe you choose a similar wine. I mean, you say, look, similar wines are doing well in Australia and doing very well in UK. Because the more I study this market, the more I notice, the more similarities there are between these Anglo-Saxon in particular markets, the structure and the taste. So this is a point I'm giving you to the expo managers. I don't know if you agree, Jill.
I do, and I think one of our discussions was, what should a good export manager do to establish a good relationship with an importer like Sapore?
Yes.
What do you need a good export manager to do?
Yes. I think export manager should do a little bit of homework, in my opinion, before approaching. And sometimes this is a positive thing, but I want to be positive with export manager. Sometimes there is a little bit of lack of that. And you should maximize your information about the global markets and propose to a local expert and say, look, this is very good for your market. Not only that, not only in terms of trends or taste, but also in terms of positioning in the market. Because next slide, so we're going to talk about landing cost. We're going to talk about the framework, the regulatory framework. So, I mean, today's technology allows you, I don't know, wine searcher, everyone uses wine searcher. You can know very easily, I don't know, for example, how many Vermentinos are sold in New Zealand. What is the retail price of Vermentino in New Zealand? If you are suggesting me to buy Vermentino, try to see if there is a gap and what kind of price point. I mean, to build a case, a strong case. In a way, you have to do a little bit of work that the importer should do. But you should help the importer to finish with it, to prepare a good picture. And when you go, when you need to be in a situation where the importers cannot say no to you. This would be ideal, obviously. It's not always possible, I say, I realize, but you can choose similar wine. This is what I would do.
Yeah. And so to help you get the wines to market,
yes.
So give you some good PR, some marketing materials to do the homework and see where those wines would fit, so
yes.
That really help you so you can't say no.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is what I would do, yeah. Maybe in my next life I will be an export manager, so I'm just getting prepared. Okay, so this is a pie that summarizes the value of imported wines, as we saw before, 50% Australia, down to 73 in terms of quantity, France more than a quarter of value, and Italy 9%. Okay. So this is something about the role of sparkling wines, Italian sparkling wines in New Zealand. So Italy makes 20% of all sparkling wines in the world in terms of volume. So Italy is really powerhouse in terms of sparkling wines. And sparkling wines represent 10% of all Italian wine production. 20% of Italian wine exports are sparkling wines. As you see, this 20%, it would be true for my company. My imports, 20% is about Prosecco. But it's not true for the global, for the New Zealand market, because as we said, more than 50% of Italian wines are Prosecco. So definitely there's a little bit of an imbalance between what's happening in New Zealand and what's happening in the global markets for Italian exports. So sparkling wines dominate Italian wine imports in New Zealand, as we say. And however, the best opportunities may lie in white and red wines. So Toscana and Piemonte are the best prospects, obviously. But you see, grapes like Soave, Vermentino, and Grillo, we have a huge potential for New Zealand. Primitivo and Montepulciano, they are already very, very good, but they can grow even more for reds. And of course, there are many other grapes, variety, but I just single out this one because I think they are it's quite clear the potential for this.
Marco, do you think putting your entry-level wines under screw cap helps the market in New Zealand?
It does, yes. Actually, it may surprise you, but at entry level, many people in New Zealand don't own a bottle opener. So okay. This is something. They say, so you do a tasting, they say, I cannot buy. I say, why? I don't have a bottle opener at home. So I gave my bottle opener to them. I said, look, you buy the wine, you get a bottle opener. So it's something you might not even think. But, you know, New Zealand has been a pioneer of the screw cap, especially Kumeo River, one of the leading wineries. So it would be absolutely welcome. Actually, one of the Soave I import, the Soave from Suavia, Monte Carbonare, just recently, it put all of the production, even the top Soave, under screw cap.
And even Piripan was one of the first 20 years ago to send their wines to Australia and New Zealand under screw cap.
Exactly. Yes. So absolutely, it's welcome in New Zealand. Okay, now we go a little bit more technical again. So we go into calculating landing cost. Because again, when you offer a wine, you will be interested as well to understand what kind of landing cost would be for the wines that you are proposing. So duty rate is quite low, is 5% only. Then we have a levy, HPA. This is a Health Promotion Agency levy. This is a levy whose revenues are segregated, are going to be used for alleviating the problems of alcohol. So it's kind of a counterbalance of the problems that alcohol might create from overconsumption. There is a debate in New Zealand, I think it's not only in New Zealand, it's probably worldwide as well, about increasing this kind of levies on wine, to the point of some people say put on a par with tobacco. I probably will not go as high as tobacco, but definitely this levy as a ten, it will go up, in my opinion, in the near future. Then we have an excise tax. Excise tax is paid by all wine and not just imported wines. And this is a fixed dollar amount. So this is regardless of the value of the wine. So obviously it has a higher impact on cheap wines. And it is quite high, actually. And again, this goes up. I mean, this is what the rules say, the regulation says, reads. Say up to 14%, this excise tax. Above 14% would be much, much higher, $64 per content, per alcohol content. We're going to talk about that later. My experience is that this is treated in a flexible way. We are not looking specifically, the New Zealand Custom Office will not check exactly if a wine is 14.5, 15%. If it is a wine, it will be applied the excise tax of $3.5. The problem for higher excise tax applies to fortified wines, where for sure, like Marsala, there's no way to avoid that. So you're going to have a higher, much higher. There is a huge difference in landing cost if you import a fortified wines or a normal wine. Then GST will be 15%. And, freight obviously New Zealand is so far away. It takes about 3 months from the moment you place an order and the moment you receive the wines in your warehouse. It takes about 3 months, sometimes even more. It's getting longer because the labeling requirements that we'll see later, you need to order the labels, apply the labels, that takes weeks. So it's more than 3 months. And the costs are about 70 cents to $1.5 per bottle. This is just the freight from Italy to the port in New Zealand. And so it depends. If you do full container, you will pay less. If you consolidate, you pay more, obviously. And then there is this labeling, because as we're going to see later, you need to apply a label for the wine to be imported in New Zealand. And this is about 10 cents per bottle. And I give you a couple of examples here. So a 5 euro ex work wine will give a landing cost of around 14 New Zealand dollars in New Zealand. On the contrary, a grappa, so obviously a much higher alcohol, would give you half a liter, would give a landing cost around 55 plus USD. And then you apply the, if you want to work out, this will be the landing cost for the importer. If you want to work out how much the importer will be normally selling his wines, importers would work normally with about 30% if they sell to a trade, so B2B. If you sell to a consumer through a website, like I do, my website is my number one customer. So when I sell through my website, the GP can be higher. It's around 50%. So you see, from 5 euros that I pay to the winery in Italy, I will end up with a retail $30 on the website or 20 on my trade catalog. So you already have an idea how you position your wine in your offer if you know this kind of numbers. Yeah. Okay, so we have labeling requirements for wine and other alcoholic drinks. Okay, so I'll go quickly here because there is this website. It's quite complex. You should look at this website because there are requirements in terms of the size, the color of the text, and fonts. They're all regulated, so it's important to do it accurately. Some of the specific requirements, pregnancy warning label is compulsory. Not just on the bottle, the back of the bottles, but also on the case, on the carton. On the carton, it will be compulsory from the 1st of February 2024. Then you need to write the approximate number of standard drinks. And this is a formula. It's 0.789 times the alcohol content, so 13, 14%, whatever is the wine, and then the volume of the container in liters. For an example, 13% wine of 750 will have a 7.7 standard drink. This has to be written at the back of the label, at the back of the bottle. And what is a standard drink? Standard drinks is a way to compare different alcoholic drinks, like a beer or a spirit or a wine. It intends to have a standard. For example, one standard drink will be more or less a can of beer, a 4% strength, alcohol strength. Then there has to be the name and the physical address of the importer, and then the GI. And this is an interesting point, because GI, New Zealand has just signed a free trade agreement with EU, and one of the requirements that EU asked New Zealand to comply with was the respect of some GI, and in particular, Prosecco. That means that Prosecco in New Zealand can be sold only if it comes from Italy, once this free trade agreement is approved by both parliaments, EU Parliament and New Zealand Parliament. At the moment, there is an agreement. Obviously, this creates a big issue for Australia Prosecco, because Australia is a producer, and is actually a producer that, I'm going to show you a chart, exports over time. You see the export from Australia to New Zealand. New Zealand is the number one market for Australian Prosecco. So obviously, Australians are not very happy about that, and they are negotiating with EU in terms of free trade agreement, and I think they just walk out.
They just walked out of the agreement. But they'll come to an arrangement.
It will come, yes. It will come. There are discussions going on. But obviously, this is very important, possibly an opportunity, a further opportunity for Italian Prosecco. Because if all Australian Prosecco had to be replaced by Italian Prosecco, Italian Prosecco in New Zealand would go up 50%, theoretically, if all Australian Prosecco was replaced by Italian Prosecco. So we're talking about interesting numbers here.
And that becomes very interesting in the relationship between Australia and New Zealand, because a lot of New Zealand wine goes to Australia. So this is quite a complex negotiation.
It is. Yes, it is. Further requirements, so we have to have, so if you state a grape, it has to be 75% of the volume must come from that grape. And if it is a blend, okay, this is quite common, there are also requirements that are in EU. Yeah. And this is an example of a back label imported by Sapore Italia, the name of importer, physical address, and then the pregnancy warning. You see the size has to be, you cannot put the small size, this is regulated, the size, the color, the font, as we said before. So this has to be, this is the same in Australia, because it's the same regulation, New Zealand and Australia. So this has to be done.
We're almost the same country.
Almost the same, eventually maybe. Okay, retailing, we need to be quick actually, okay. Yes. So retailing, there are two main supermarket chains in New Zealand. One is owned by Woolworths, which is an Australian supermarket, and the other one is locally owned. And there is a duopoly, there's a little bit of political issue because they are kind of an inquiry in terms of possible collusion. There's not much competition in the supermarket industry in New Zealand. But it's one of the problems of being a small country. There's not much competition sometimes. And but they sell a lot of wine through supermarkets, especially the commercial wine that we saw before. So off-license account for the largest share of all sales, so 66% of off-license. For example, I noticed that in Italy, on-license is much more important than in New Zealand. So obviously, restaurants in Italy, they sell much more wine than restaurants in New Zealand. This is another important difference between the two markets. And then e-commerce is growing in New Zealand, especially after COVID, as it happened worldwide. So the online share is about 10% and is expected to increase to 13.9% by 2027. Okay, takeaway points. I hope you had an insight on the consumer preferences of New Zealand drinkers. So how to... I hope I give you some hints of what New Zealand drinkers like at the moment, and then possible change, possible diversification from the main Sauvignon Blanc style, of particularly the white wines. And familiarity with wine importing regulation in terms of labeling requirements, understanding the regulatory framework, and of course you need to comply because this is very important. Then estimating the cost implication of importing Italian wines is important for whenever you trying to sell Italian wines, to know where they will be positioned. And again, I say Wine Searcher is a wonderful instrument, very easy to use and find out. And then there are different channels. So the off-premise is the main channel, actually, in New Zealand. On-premise is still important, especially for premium wines, but has a lower share than in countries like Italy. And then to summarize the key point that I put in the bold at the end, and it is the reason why I say an uncompleted success story. I explain the title of my presentation, because New Zealand has been the fastest growing, Italian wines have been the fastest growing category of wines in New Zealand. So Italian wines have done very well the last 5 years. But it's uncompleted because it's too concentrated on Prosecco. So half of the imports is Prosecco. And probably will even go higher if the Australian Prosecco will be replaced by Italian. But having said that, this is an opportunity for red wines to go to spread even more, and definitely white wines to grow even more in New Zealand.
It's great. Thank you so much for your presentation, Marco. Yeah. That was a very interesting insight into the market.
We're out of time. We're going to be in trouble if we go any longer. But thank you so much for your attention. And great thanks to Marco for his interesting presentation.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts,
Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.